And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, thank you to Chris Lombardo, Nicole Bandis, and Tom Boschmeyer for being in the debut show of Coach's Corner. Did any of you guys hear Coach's Corner by any chance?
Yes.
Oh, how'd you like it, Chris?
It was good. I liked it.
Oh, it was good, huh? Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. But
I'm interested in the book.
In the book. Oh, are you? Well, yeah. She's still out there. She could probably autograph it for you. Wouldn't that be good? That or you can get nice. It from Amazon.com. I don't know. Either one. Anyway, this is a real estate panel. This is a great show because, as people know, real estate has been in a sort of sad shape for quite a while, actually, now. And it probably will be in sad shape for a little bit longer. And, of course, our panel members are none other than Terry Cass from Cass and Long. I was going to say from Commercial Broker. That's silly. You are a commercial broker. Cass and Long Commercial Group. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks.
And,
glad to be here.
Oh, absolutely. And Chris Gray from American Financial Lending.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Good afternoon. That was formal. Let's do that again.
Hola.
Hola. That's even better. And we have a special guest. Of course, we did a seminar together. It was really a blast. And, of course, Cass and Long Commercial Group put it on. I really enjoyed that. Did you like that?
I enjoyed it very much.
And we have Meg Steiner from LaRona Steiner Ducar Limited and Attorneys.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So this is going to be fun because there's a lot of questions that people are asking when it comes to real estate. And maybe we'll start by just sort of introducing in a little bit more depth. Terry, talk a little bit more about, as a commercial broker, your company, Cass & Long Commercial Group, what you guys do.
Well, we're a commercial brokerage. We specialize in apartment complexes. We've been doing it for a long time, I think since the 90s.
Wow.
Jim Caston and Jan Long started it then. I started back. Actually, I started investing in 93, but got into brokerage in 2003.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I had a management company. I started as an owner. Yeah, you knew me when I bought my first complexes back in the 90s.
Yeah, and we don't mean inferiority complexes. We mean apartment complexes.
That's right. And now I'm buying the same ones for the same price
in
2011.
That's right.
Isn't that amazing?
Before and after, right?
Sometimes cheaper. Same ones.
Now, here's a question. I always ask this. Let's see if you get this. Where did I first meet you?
Chompies.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow, that's a good
one. And Greenway.
Yeah.
Remember Greenway?
Then they moved.
Second. Yeah.
That's a pretty good place.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Chompies?
I have.
What's your favorite?
Boy, I think the Plain.
The who?
Plain Bagels.
Oh, Plain. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, I've been there. I don't. A few times. Yeah. I don't do much with.
All right. It's not a food show. What can we say? Now, okay. So thank you, Terry. Now, Chris, our newest panel member, American Financial Lending, tell us a little bit about who Chris Gray is.
I've been a mortgage lender in the Valley for roughly 15 years. Been in finance in one form or other for since about 1990. I think that depending on what point of view you're coming from, the real estate market is in good shape.
That's a nice reframe. I like that.
Like, for instance, Mr. Terry is buying apartment complexes at a very good price.
Yeah.
So he likes the real estate market.
With great financing.
There
5% and 6% rates.
There
nice.
You go.
Yeah.
So from that point of view, or that perspective,
yeah,
it's a smoking real estate market.
I like that. That's a really good way to look at it. And we did talk about that in Coach's Corner. It's just thoughts. You can have negative or positive, and nicely done. Chris Gray, we're going to get you on Coach's Corner next time. All right. Now, Meg Steiner, tell us a little bit about your law firm, a little bit about you as an attorney.
Okay. My law firm is LaRona Steiner Ducar, and we have been a law firm for about 25, 30 years. Name has changed over the years. I've been with the firm since about 2001. I have been a real estate attorney for almost 30 years.
So not real long.
Not real long. As law firm move-arounds go. Before that, I was a CPA.
You were? I didn't know that.
Yes, I was.
Are you still active?
No, I haven't been active for many, many years.
What a great combination. You don't find many CPA attorneys.
It does help a lot understanding the business side of deals.
Nice.
Definitely.
I'm impressed. This is good.
And my practice is all real estate related. I do not litigate, so I don't go to court. It's all related to real estate in down economies. It might be foreclosures and workouts and good times developments.
That is so cool. So you cover both ends of it.
I do.
Good and bad. That's a good way to approach it. And I bet both of you do the same thing. Because, Terry, you're buying stuff good prices.
Yeah, I'm very active.
You're a buyer when it's, you know, low like this.
I'm a buyer. I'm a seller. I'm a partner. We're doing management. We're doing rehab, redevelopment, repositioning. I'm not bragging, but I have, you know, a lot of listings, a lot of escrows. Meg's involved in a couple of my short sales to protect the seller. And I always recommend when it's a short sale, talk to a CPA and talk to a lawyer, and probably part owner. You know, we've been buying up, I don't know, I think I have 20 or 25 different properties I'm involved in and ownership positions.
Wow.
In partnership. Yeah, so, I mean, I found a nice niche, and like Chris was saying, I looked at the positive.
Oh, yeah.
And just turned this around last year, and it's been going steady. Great opportunities out there. You got to be nuts not to buy today.
Yeah, because it's not going to get really any lower, especially the interest rates.
All of these factors lining up like this again, no, it's not going to happen again.
Not in another million years, maybe.
Well, it'll happen again, but probably not in my lifetime.
Maybe when there's a reincarnation of the current political landscape.
You know, our Mayan calendar thing, I don't
know. Oh, yeah, we were supposed to end on Saturday, did we?
No, that was different. No, that's not the Mayan.
Oh, what is it?
I forgot the church.
That was the...
Oh.
Yeah.
The spiritual one.
But he's changed. Oh. He's moved it to October now.
Oh, it's a
so
moving target.
So we have till October.
All right, there we go. So get your season tickets now for the Coyotes. All right. So, Chris, and you're very positive, too. And, of course, you know, we've talked off there many times over the last couple of weeks. And what I'm really impressed with you about is that despite everyone, you know, crying and moaning as a lender, you go out and do something about it.
Yeah, I mean, with rates where they're at and home prices where they're at, it's a huge time right now for a lot of people to get in. And if you never thought you'd be able to afford, for instance, an investment property, now's the time. I mean, okay, so go buy a $20,000 condo, you know, and for payments of $400 a month and rent it for $950. I mean, that's immediate cash flow. You can't find a pension like that anywhere.
That's a good point. You know, in fact, I was visiting someone I know. There's a big condo complex, maybe you both know, on Central near Camelback. Mm-hmm. Do you know that big high-rise? It's really a nice place. And evidently, those things used to go for, like, what, $400,000 or something? And now they're, like, going for $50,000. I mean, can you imagine buying that? I mean,
and rentals are in demand. Our vacancy rate has gone down five straight months in a row.
Yeah,
and huge demand because most people can't buy anymore that lost their house. Huge demand for rental homes.
Well, and on that note, I have money for just about everybody. I mean, I have traditional lending and private money as well. Private money means I have investors that said, hey, Chris, lend my money. Lend mine at 10.9 for people trying to do this. Some other guy says, hey, lend my money at 14% to people trying to do this, depending on what end of the spectrum they're at. So, you know, like in Terry's case, so for some of his listings, if he gets somebody that wants to buy some for an investment or something, you know, he can call me up and I say, sure, I got some money for that, you know, somehow or other. So, and I have that all the way from $27,000 transactions to a $1.9 million transaction, you know, and I just got somebody like $900,000 in about 24 hours.
Really?
In private money.
You must have a great pipeline.
So, yeah, I have a lot of contacts. I've been doing a little bit.
I could use a cool million. All right, maybe
I need
not.
About 15 minutes.
Okay. 15 minutes can save you car insurance. So how does that go, Geico, remember? Anyway, that's interesting. So both of you, we'll get Meg's perspective in a second, but from a commercial broker standpoint, a lending standpoint, there's nothing better. I mean, this is a time that you'll never see again. So what do you recommend people do, at least from a behavioral standpoint, or maybe mindset, is really start to plan, Because there's probably still some time, don't you think, to pull off some good deals?
Oh, yeah. I'd say there's a good year, at least this year, and part of 2012. I'm talking to investors about loans. I mean, traditional loans, and Chris does them, duplexes, triplexes, and fourplexes. You can get 5.25%, 30-year fixed. That's what most of my investors are going for in the deal.
And your average person needs to jump out of the box. They need to, if you walk into your corner store bank and they go, oh, well, no, you don't qualify for whatever reason, they say, a lot of people, once they do that, think they're done. They can't borrow. Call me.
Yeah.
But call a banker broker. Call somebody like, in my position, even if, it's not me, but call somebody in a banker broker position, because
Chris will go to many avenues and find a loan.
Exactly.
You go to one bank and they turn you down, that's it. You go to Chris, he can go to 30 lenders.
Right.
So maybe it might not be 5.25. Maybe he's got a private guy that'll do 8, 10, 12. He's got a lot. So I tend to use mortgage brokers.
Right.
Because they will cater the loan to you. Another avenue, which doesn't help him, but I still think is a great avenue to investors, is your IRA money.
Right.
Huge.
Cross-collateralization.
Yeah, or investments, or take your IRA money. You can do loans with it. Mm-hmm. You can buy investments. You're not getting any sort of return anywhere else.
Right.
That totally makes sense. Yeah. So there is really a difference among professionals. I mean, there's professionals that you can go to, and they'll try one source. Then you can go to professionals, and their mindset will be the lead to accomplish amazing things by making sure that there is a way. I mean, I bet your belief systems are there's always a way, right?
That's exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I can find an investment, and I'm sure Chris can find, if you need a loan, can probably find money available.
That's correct.
To make it work.
And the same thought, as far as, since we're on that, goes with me as far as I'll work with people in their credit. If you had a bankruptcy today and you've never paid anybody, that's a pretty rough spot, but I mean, it's somewhere to start. So I help people with their credit situations too. So that's not a dead end either.
So that's important to know. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Terry Cass, Chris Gray, and special in studio guest, we have Meg Steiner, and we'll be right back.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911? The firemen don't know what to do, the truck's got a flat tire, the water hose has a leak, they can't decide what to wear, and everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process, they follow it, they're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Cry, And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is a real estate panel starring Terry Cass and Chris Gray. We have special in-studio guest Meg Steiner, an attorney, real estate attorney. How appropriate on the real estate panel. Well, let's talk a little bit about something I think that confuses a lot of people, anti-deficiency statutes in Arizona. So, Meg, why don't we talk about how does this apply? What are some of the criteria, the requirements? What do people have to know about anti-deficiency?
Well, let me start with the basics. Most people, when they buy a home, buy it through a loan that is secured by a deed of trust on their residence. And the deed of trust grants a lien on the residence to secure repayment of the loan. If the homeowner defaults on the loan, the lender typically, after some period of time, will commence a foreclosure on the property. 9 times out of 10, that foreclosure is a non-judicial trustee sale conducted by an attorney or by a foreclosure arm of a title company or a company set up to handle foreclosures. A non-judicial trustee sale is conducted outside of the courtroom, outside of the legal proceedings, and is a private sale that is noticed by recording a notice of trustee sale, publishing that sale notice, accomplishing a series of mailings, and posting the property. The sale takes place approximately 91 days after the sale is noticed. And at the auction, the lender opens the auction with a credit bid. Now, the lender's credit bid will be based on the lender's determination of the value of the property, which these days is usually a lot less than the debt on the property. So, for example, if a property is worth $100,000 and the debt is $200,000, the auction starts with the lender's bid of $100,000. If a third party outbids the lender, the property goes to the third party. Otherwise, it goes to the lender for the $100,000 credit bid. After the auction, the difference between whatever the property brought at auction, say using the $100,000 example, and the amount of the debt is called the deficiency. So using the figures that I mentioned earlier, the deficiency with a $100,000 credit bid and a $200,000 debt would be $100,000. Normally, the lender can go after the borrower for that deficiency amount and can sue the borrower, get a judgment against the borrower, garnish wages, collect that judgment against other assets of the borrower. Arizona, though, has what we call an anti-deficiency statute, which provides that as long as the property is a single one-family or two-family dwelling, and it's on 2.5 acres or less, and it has been limited to and utilized as a dwelling, the lender cannot sue the borrower following the completion of the foreclosure sale.
So that means there's no deficiency judgment. And,
correct.
And now, do you have to have certain language in? I mean, this is where you probably come in. Is that automatic, or do you have to have some type of, you know, with you as an attorney to deal with the lender?
It's by statute. Yeah. There doesn't have to be any particular language in the loan documents, and it's a matter of Arizona law. As long as the property falls within the criteria, you are protected. Where it gets interesting are situations such as spec homes. Spec home hasn't been lived in as a dwelling. So if I am working with somebody that has a spec home, I suggest that they go live in there part-time.
And for how long, do you think?
Well, we don't really have cases interpreting what the requirement is, but I think as long as you've been utilizing it as a dwelling, whether it's a second home or a weekend home, the protection applies. It also applies to rental homes, as long as, again, it's a one- or two-family dwelling. If the property is more than 2.5 acres, some of these huge horse properties in the valley, you don't have the protection.
So that's important. It's also, I suspect, important to know whether you have a non-recourse or recourse debt on your original home.
It really doesn't matter on the residential because typically loans on residential properties are not non-recourse by the terms of the loan, whereas in commercial properties you often do have non-recourse loans, which by their terms limit the lender's remedies following foreclosure. On a residential property, as long as it falls within the statutory parameters, you have the protection.
Now, does it apply? I know there's a lot of confusion. I think you did a great job clearing this up. If someone refinanced their let's say their principal home, a lot of people did during the heydays, and what happens then?
If the original loan has been refinanced, and we don't have any cases specifically on point, but the case law seems to suggest that definitely the original purchase money portion of the loan is protected. So if, say, you bought your house and took a loan out for $100,000, and over the years you refinanced it two or three times and you were up to $200,000, at least the original $100,000 is protected. There are some Arizona cases that suggest the whole $200,000 would be protected. I guess the conservative view would be to look at it as though you have the protection on the original purchase money amount and potentially would have some exposure on the other. But we don't have a specific case on point yet.
So if it's not really, you know, a done deal, for example, you don't have cases on point, is it wise then to get an attorney to negotiate with the lender in that case? And perhaps you can maybe limit the deficiency?
Well, the deficiencies usually can be negotiated for some percentage on the dollar. Where you have a single loan on property, I'm not seeing the lenders going after borrowers following foreclosure following trustees sales, even if potentially there's an argument they could go after the borrower for the difference between the original purchase money loan and the refinanced amount. Where lenders are going after borrowers is where you've got a home equity loan or a second on the house, because home equity loans are typically not purchase money loans. So when the senior loan forecloses, that home equity loan becomes an unsecured debt, and those lenders are going after borrowers. But they're settling.
They are going after them?
Yes.
You have kids? I mean, it's not hearsay anymore. There's actual cases?
Yeah. They're settling, though, very easily. I mean, usually if you offer, you know, a percentage, 10%, sometimes less, they'll go for it very quickly.
What is the time frame? I have a lot of people call me, and I have a time frame in mind, but I don't, with things changing so much, has that changed? How long do they have to say, like the second? How long do they have to come after you for that? Or,
well, the second would not be a deficiency action. If it were a deficiency action following foreclosure, the time period is 90 days after the trustee's sale is completed. But in the case of a second, it would be a suit on a promissory note, which is a contract action, which in Arizona is 6 years.
That's right. Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. So quite a long time.
Quite a long time.
Because the reason for that question is I have clients call me up, you know, just all up in arms because people don't know what to do,
right.
You know, in these situations. So they're trying to figure out, okay, so, you know, maybe the husband has been laid off or the wife has been laid off or their hours have been cut or both of them their hours have been cut. So they don't know if they should file bankruptcy or if they should just stop paying the debt, you know. You know, okay, we're short selling our house, and then when we or whatever, you know. So, all right, so if the house is foreclosed and they had a second like that, say, because mm-hmm. here's a scenario I've had. The house foreclosed, they had a second, they have all this other debt, they're thinking of filing bankruptcy, but now their concern is, what if I file bankruptcy and then 5.5 years from now, the second comes after me?
Well, no, if they file bankruptcy, they would list the second as one of their contingent obligations, and it would be addressed in the bankruptcy.
So even though it already foreclosed, I can go back and contingent obligation.
You would address the liability on the second in the bankruptcy if someone felt they had to go that route. But bankruptcy is about the most extreme route you can go, and oftentimes you can settle these without having to file bankruptcy.
And what's a typical settlement? I mean, they're not requiring, I would guess, you know, cash up front. There's terms, extended terms to settle on the percentage on the dollar?
I've worked with borrowers that have been able to settle with a down payment and payments over 2 or 3 years. You get your best settlement, though, if you can come up with cash, if you can borrow it from your retirement funds. If you've, you know, I suggest to people, if you're not paying your mortgage and you know you're going to have a foreclosure, put that money aside because you can use it to settle with your second lender.
That's a great idea. So it's not necessarily just cash, but that is your best
option. Cash is the best route.
That's usually the case anyway. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. And now, what about short sales? I think there's confusion also on that. Is anti-deficiency statutes apply to short sales?
They do not. And I think there's a lot of confusion out there. People think that if they do a short sale, it's like a foreclosure, and as long as it's a house, they're protected and the lender can't come after them. And I've had people come to me after the fact and say, well, I'm getting all these phone calls. What do I do? And I say, well, let me see your short sale approval letter. And then when I look at the letter, there's specifically language in the letter that says, you know, notwithstanding the lender taking this payoff on the loan and releasing the lien of the deed of trust, I, borrower, recognize I'm still responsible for the balance. And there is a lot of feeling out there that the anti-deficiency statute should protect short sales because the underlying philosophy is somewhat the same. You know, a person's residence, if you have to lose your residence, you shouldn't have to put your other assets at risk. But unfortunately, that's not the law. Right now, the law does not provide the protection in short sales.
So do you think that might change? Have you heard anything up in the...
I've not. A year or so ago, there was a legislation enacted that added an additional requirement to the anti-deficiency statute that would have required you have lived in the residence for 6 months prior to the foreclosure. It was signed by the governor. I'm not sure the governor realized what the effect of it would be, and it was later repealed, and nothing's been passed since then.
So I have seen in some of the short sale agreements where the lender has said, okay, we'll not hold you liable. You're free of all the debt when we close. Mm-hmm. So then in that situation, it is what it says. Obviously, they're free of all of it. But what about the ones that don't say that then? So people are asking me, okay, so should I go back and tell them either put that verbiage in my contract or just let it foreclose? Am I better off in just letting it foreclose because then they don't come after me?
Right. Obviously, if you can get it in the contract.
That's not true. They still have 90 days. It's just a shorter period to come after them.
Well, and I think where Terry was going was where I was going to go. You still need to go back and analyze if you let it foreclose instead of doing the short sale, could they come after you personally? Because if the answer is no, they can't, then yes, you might as well let them take the property through foreclosure.
Right, if it's purchase money is what I was
meaning. Foreclosure hurts your credit more than a short sale. You got to weigh one against the other, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a fine line because
that's why I say talk to a lawyer and accountant. Yeah. There's a lot of variables you got to go through to decide is a short sale or a foreclosure better.
Right. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue this discussion on foreclosure versus short sale because there really is a difference. I think the credit has some consequences, whether it's a foreclosure or a short sale. We'll talk about that, and we'll be right back.
I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hyten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years' experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the real estate panel starring Terry Cass, who has stepped out for a moment with some breaking news, I think, when he comes back. I can't wait to hear this. And, of course, Chris Gray, lender for American Financial Lending and special in-studio guest. We'll call you Margaret Steiner, but you go by Meg Steiner.
Meg, please.
Okay, Meg, please. Oh, you mean Meg, not the middle name, please, but just Meg. Anyway, you're a great real estate attorney. Everyone should have that right now, I'm telling you, with everything going on. I was going to ask a couple other things about trust deed sales and so on. Tell us a little bit about that. I guess lenders have an option.
Well, in Arizona, as I mentioned earlier, most loans are secured with a deed of trust. In Arizona, though, a deed of trust can be foreclosed either through the trustee's sale that I was talking about earlier, or the lender has the option of foreclosing through a judicial action through superior court. And the difference is a judicial foreclosure involves a lawsuit against the borrower. Once the lender obtains a judgment, the lender directs the sheriff to sell the property. So you have the sheriff conducting the foreclosure sale as opposed to a attorney or a title company that handles foreclosures. In virtually 100% of the cases, lenders do not go that route. And the reason is a judicial foreclosure is more expensive and takes a lot longer. It'll take several months to a year instead of 3 months, 90 days. In addition, following the completion of the judicial foreclosure, the borrower has the right to redeem the property for up to 6 months following the foreclosure. And so it would hinder the lender's ability to sell the property following foreclosure.
That's sort of cool to know. That's very important. So what are some of the typical – I hear a phone. Kurt, that's your phone, isn't it? Come on, admit
it.
All right, maybe it's not. Anyway, what are some of the typical things, Meg, that you're seeing as a real estate attorney? Maybe let's compare it 3 years ago to now. What happened 3 years ago? What happens now? What are some of those? Maybe you have some stories, too, but what are you typically seeing?
Well, I'm seeing, like Chris and Terry, a lot of investors starting to come into the market. 3 years ago, there weren't, I mean, you could count the deals on one hand. Mm-hmm. You know, lenders weren't loaning. People were afraid to invest. Everybody was waiting to see when the market would bottom. I think now in the last, particularly the last 6 months, especially since the beginning of 2011, I'm just seeing a lot more people investing. I think you have a lot of people, as Chris is saying, investing in the residential properties. You can pick up what used to be a $300,000 house for under $100,000. I'm seeing people doing rollovers with their retirement money and using retirement money to invest in real estate. On the commercial side, I'm seeing cash investors. I'm seeing a lot of investors coming out of Canada coming into our market. And people are doing creative things to invest in properties. Some buyers are willing to pay more than a property's worth if they can assume a loan that has a good 30-year term with good interest rate. I think people are just having to be more creative and find other ways to accomplish it.
So what's keeping you busy? Where do you focus most of your attention these days?
It still is a mix. I'm still doing a lot of foreclosures. I'm working with a lot of residential borrowers on consultations in terms of the particular circumstances that they're under and figuring out what the best option for them is. Sometimes letting it go to foreclosure is the best option. Sometimes short sale makes the most sense. So I'm still doing a lot of that. I'm doing a lot on the borrower side, working with Terry on a number of files and working to settle deficiencies on commercial properties, working on short sales on commercial properties.
So if I can interrupt a little bit. So then from a client's perspective, if I called you, how long could I expect it to take me on the phone before you could tell me, yeah, you know, I can work with you or you're someone I can work with? And then what would it cost me to come see you for a 30-minute or hour consultation that first time?
What I do with a lot of residential property owners is a one-hour consultation. I usually ask to see their loan documents ahead of time so I can review the documents and make sure they're not anything unusual or there aren't any additional covenants or provisions that might impose liability other than the normal liability that we're talking about on the deficiency. And usually in an hour, we can cover, you know, the basics about Arizona foreclosure law. We can talk about the facts of their particular situation and how the law would apply. We can talk about some of the other issues you have to think about when you're considering a foreclosure, such as if you live in a subdivision where you have homeowners assessments. Those homeowners assessments are personal obligations. So if you quit paying your mortgage, don't quit paying your homeowner's assessments because they are personal. The homeowners, the HOAs will come after you.
And people don't know that.
And the HOAs are going after people because they're underfunded. They don't have enough money to pay the guy that mows the grass. So I always tell people keep paying your HOA.
Especially if you're in a condo and it's 300-400 people do not know.
Exactly. Do not stop paying.
I've seen people with $15,000 and $16,000 collections from HOAs because they thought, I'm foreclosing. Yeah, so that's huge.
Yeah, so
I'm glad you mentioned that.
You know,
that's huge.
That's an issue. Another issue people need to keep in mind is that in addition to exposure under the foreclosure statutes, Arizona has a waste statute so that if you, for instance, are letting your house go to foreclosure, you want to be careful that you don't trash the house. I mean, there are horror stories out there of people that take a granite countertop and use a sledgehammer on it. Or I heard one story about somebody that left a house and had pounded nails every inch, an inch apart on all the walls. And those are the kinds of things that a lender can come after you independent of any liability following foreclosure because it's considered waste or damage to the property.
So even if you have anti-deficiency, it doesn't matter.
This is a separate action.
That's amazing. Mm-hmm.
For instance, the people that are stripping everything out of the house thinking it's theirs.
You have to be careful about that because if it's something that is a fixture, which is defined as something that would traditionally be considered permanently attached to the property.
A ceiling fan, a toilet.
I tell people if it's your, you know, grandmother's chandelier, go buy a cheap one at Home Depot and put the cheap one in and take the good one out.
Oh, I like that idea.
Well, so replace the granite with formica. Okay.
Now, what if, have you had a case or have you heard of a case where, let's say someone moved out and it's been vacant for 6 months, it gets foreclosed after the fact, maybe after 3 months, but someone else comes in and does damage. Would the person liable? How do you prove it?
I suggest people, if they're planning to move out before the foreclosure, I suggest they take pictures. And I suggest they still, even if they're out of the house, make sure it's secure. Talk to neighbors. Make sure that they're not leaving it in a condition that somebody could come in and trash it.
How about carry homeowners on it still?
Yes, definitely keep your insurance in place until you don't own it.
Yeah.
You know, this is great advice. I people just don't know that. And plus, they're so emotionally distraught anyway. They're not thinking of this. I always say you should always have a good relationship, whether you need an attorney or not, just to have that relationship. Because you never know when this could come in handy.
So, Meg, I'm sorry. But back to, like I was saying, okay, so we call you, part of the question was, like just a general idea of some sort of initial cost. But then you were saying, about bringing all your documents to review. I realize you don't specialize in bankruptcy, but that's all part of what people are into now also. Reorganization of debt somehow, a 13, whatever. But so then if I'm talking to you then about my short sale or foreclosure, could I then also say, hey, Meg, so, then you know, yeah, along with, you know, our hours being cut, we also can't afford our Amex or our whatever card anymore. And, you know, should I be filing BK? Should I work out payment plans myself with a credit card? Can you do all of that? Can you handle all of that at your place as well?
You know, I am not a bankruptcy attorney, and I have bankruptcy attorneys that I refer people to. If their situation is such that maybe bankruptcy is a viable alternative, I always recommend, you know, you come to me for the consultation on the foreclosure, but you ought to also spend an hour with a bankruptcy attorney and see if that's the right fit for you.
See, because that's kind of what I was getting at. So I come see you, $200, whatever, some sort of consultation fee for that hour. Then you go, well, if bankruptcy or whatever, you know, reorganization of debt is in line two, now I go see a BK attorney and I give them a couple of $100. These people in these situations don't have $200, and whatever how much they are. That's why I was wondering, you know.
Yeah, but you know, when you look at it from the bigger picture, paying for a couple of hours of attorney time and getting the right advice, then not getting the advice and not making the right decision, you know, it's really what's a priority to them.
And that's what I was looking for. Thanks.
And I can relate to that, being a CPA, because a lot of people, if you're price shopping, that doesn't work because, you know, people will go to sometimes the lowest paid tax preparer, and when they get audited, it actually turns out add about another $5,000 for the audit. So right. Now you're maybe like $5,500. And I would have charged maybe like $600. You know, so, you know, I could understand that, and I appreciate that. Professional advice, there's nothing like it.
Nice. Well, and I think, Dave, you mentioned the accountant. That's really the third component of the picture. You really need to get tax advice if you're considering doing a short sale or a walkaway, because depending on the circumstances, you may have tax consequences that will make everything else look minimal.
Oh, absolutely, and people don't realize that either. I mean, and that's where, there's certain key terms, and listeners can write this down if they want, unless they're driving, but, you know, cancellation of debt, income, of course, there's insolvency rules, there's bankruptcy rules that would maybe negate some of that. Of course, if it's a non-recourse debt, then you don't have cancellation of debt, but you may have a gain or loss on a sale. So, you know, what it's called is a bifurcated transaction when it comes to recourse debt. Because you could actually have cancellation of debt income and a gain or loss on a sale. Mm-hmm. That could be, you're right, Meg, that could be a rude awakening. Like they think they're off the hook and guess, Uncle Sam is going to have some of their action.
Dave, do you happen to know a good CPA people could call and ask those questions?
I think so. let's ask Meg or Terry. I was hesitant
I don't
to say.
Know any good
yeah,
CPA.
I knew Terry was going to say that.
Right. Let's ask former tax auditor Dave Isaac.
Yeah, there we go. Thank you, Chris. The check's in the mail. And but we did a nice seminar or workshop, and I think that worked out pretty well. Remember, Terry? That was a lot of fun. Cass and Long put on a great event. It was what, maybe, I don't know, 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. But you drew a lot of people.
Yeah, we helped a lot of people. Yeah,
you helped a huge number of people. I like that. Are you going to do it again?
Yeah, we haven't decided on a date, but we will.
Wow.
But when I just walked in, but yeah, I won't talk to anybody without referring a lawyer and then a CPA. Because just the debt forgiveness alone is staggering.
It is.
People don't get it.
They don't. I mean, CPAs and tax preparers, a lot of them, they don't get it, and they may end up doing the wrong thing. And, you know, I mean, there's tax attributes. Just because you are insolvent or bankrupt doesn't mean you're off the hook, because you start reducing certain things called tax attributes, like net operating losses, maybe basis and property. So it's sometimes a deferral, not a permanent reduction of income. And it's really interesting. A lot of people don't realize that. And if you don't talk to an attorney or a CPA, you don't even know this thing exists. And that's the scary part.
I've lost clients because I scared them. But I'm glad I lost them, because I'd rather lose them than be sued. Because I know if they didn't do what I said, they'd probably end up suing me for giving them bad advice. So I scare them. I go, look, these are all the issues. You talk over with a CPA and a lawyer. Make sure you're okay. Then move forward. Because I don't want to handle their business. Because, you know, what if they didn't? And they didn't realize the IRS now wants a 33% of a $200,000 tax forgiveness. That's $60,000 these people owe.
They would not be happy.
No, they would sue me.
So and that's what makes you a great professional, Terry.
Yeah,
you cover all the bases, and he does, and so do you, Chris. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the real estate panel. Of course, we have Terry Cass from Cast and Long Commercial Group Chris Gray, American Financial Lending, and special in-studio guest Meg Steiner, and we'll be right back after this break.
Is it important for you to develop a financial plan without the potential conflict associated with commission sales? As a fee-only financial planner, I am paid by you and only you, my client. I'm not compensated in any way by the recommendations I provide. Have you heard the phrase, people do not plan to fail, they fail to plan? My experience has shown that this is too often true when considering one's financial future. If you're ready to take action, call me, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner and Certified Divorce Financial Analyst, directly at 602-235-0336. We'll discuss your financial situation and review some small or perhaps large changes that will help you obtain the financial future you desire. Don't let the lack of a plan affect your family's financial future. Call me, Bob Berger, at 602-235-0336 for a free consultation. Again, Bob Berger, Certified Financial Planner, 602-235-0336.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is the real estate panel, always on the fourth Tuesday from 3 to 4, starring Terry Cass from Cass & Long Commercial Group and Chris Gray, American Financial Lending. Special in-studio guest Meg Steiner from Lorona Steiner & Dukar, a great law firm. And I'll tell you, there are absolutely differences in law firms. And you need to understand that. People need to really realize that not all professionals are the same. Am I right, Meg?
Of course.
Yeah, there's no doubt. But it's really true. And people, sadly, don't really have the technical ability to analyze often, you know, who's a good doctor, who's a good attorney, CPA, you know, other professionals. What do you tell them? I mean, what advice would you give people when they're looking for an attorney?
Well, to me, an attorney needs to be responsive. I mean, if you've got to call three times to get an appointment with somebody, that's not a good sign. Yeah. We're a service business. And so, you know, I think people have to get a feel for the law firm and the kind of service they provide. And that's really what it's about.
And also background. I mean, you have great experience. And you're really, I don't know if we can use the word specialist, but you concentrate in a certain area, which means a lot, because a lot of attorneys don't know some of these rules like anti-deficiency statutes.
Well, I actually am a certified real estate specialist by the State Bar of Arizona.
Excellent. Oh, that's even better. One time I had an attorney on here, he said, you can never call an attorney a specialist. You have to say they concentrate in it. But I guess unless you're certified like that.
Right. Our state bar recognizes specialization in several areas, criminal, real estate, tax.
Oh, that's
family law.
Excellent. Very nice. Now, Terry Cass has some breaking news as a great reporter he is. What is the breaking news? We're going to break it first.
Now, remember, I'm a realtor, not a news reporter. Supposedly, Mr. Tom Horn, who is, which attorney is he? The county?
He's attorney general.
He's the attorney general, is filing an injunction against the legality of the marijuana dispensary law about legal medical marijuana, and our governor is postponing applications indefinitely until this gets settled in terms of turning in your applications to open up a dispensary, which was going to start June 1st, if you've been zoned by the city that it's okay to put a marijuana dispensary there. So this is going to cause a lot of talk here.
So was a lot of people applying for something like this?
Yeah. I was involved with a group that was investing in it. And, yeah, I'm guessing there's got to be at least 20 to 30 people that have approved locations that were going to submit apps starting June 1st to the state health department. So this is going to put it on hold, and they were supposed to be informed 45 to 60 days later if they got it.
So there's been a lot of money spent by
some
people
getting
ready and set up for this.
Legal apps, zoning, very expensive to get something zoned. Yeah, I mean, we're talking tens of thousands of dollars, just, you know, non-refundable that's been invested.
Well, how could that be? I mean, Meg, that may not be your specialty, but I'm just curious as an attorney, and we'll open up to the panel, is that I know the voters, well, they voted it in.
They approved it.
But how could it get on the ballot if it may have been potentially illegal? I mean, how does that work?
Well, it's illegal federally.
It's a state law that was passed, but it's under federal law. It's still illegal.
Yet, if they knew that, I mean, why? I'm just wondering why they put it on the ballot if they thought there would be a challenge in the first place.
Because the Obama administration said they would not.
They would not actively enforce
it. And there are other states that have legal medical marijuana, Colorado, Michigan, California.
Yeah.
Now, 2 weeks ago, our federal attorney, I don't know what, said that he's open to the possibility of now enforcing federal law, which put a scare into everybody a couple weeks ago. I think this is what started it.
Why is it such a bad thing in Arizona? Why is it such a big deal? I mean, I
think, Meg, you might be able, maybe they're just putting down the gauntlet. The federal government says enough, you know, with Arizona as the most current state legalizing it. Said maybe we may put the gauntlet down here and get this straightened out because it's getting out of hand.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, there may be some of that. I do know the other states that have had it. It's been a great boon to the economies in those states.
Oh.
It generates real estate activity.
Yeah,
it generates a lot of business development.
You know, a lot of people still move here for retirement, and a lot of those folks have ailments and sicknesses. Mm-hmm. So maybe they figured too many people would be on that prescription.
Yeah.
Well, it'll make better boom.
It'll make
economy,
the front
though.
Page tomorrow. So I guess we'll get. All are the news tonight.
Find out tonight.
Yeah, this only happened about 20 minutes ago. So
wow, see, you are a reporter. You have breaking news. Now, I'm curious. I don't know if we'll know the answer, but if they're successful, let's say it stops in Arizona, I wonder if that's now going to spread to a state like California, what's already legal, and maybe the feds come in, and now not just tens of thousands.
They found
these
loophole.
Are actually businesses that can lose.
This is hundreds of millions.
What would happen there,
yeah.
you think? Yeah. I mean, is that a possibility?
I don't know.
It could be if that's the direction the feds are going.
Because could Arizona say, wait, that's favoritism. California, Colorado, Michigan, they're doing it.
Others, yeah.
Why are we not doing it? And that could be a problem, wouldn't it? Couldn't that be a problem?
I would guess.
Wow, we should have a special
panel.
Well,
no, because you're saying that the state's going to shut it down.
I was going to say, you're saying this is a state action,
so
though, not
state
a federal.
Shuts
the state
it
is
down.
Afraid what the federal government's going to do, so supposedly she's putting it on indefinite hold until we get some sort of federal response as to what's going to go on. She's worried about state workers issuing licenses. Are they liable, according to Google?
Oh.
So, you know, I'm sure she's just hedging her bet and doesn't want to do anything.
But you said Obama said it was...
He told me, his statement was he would not enforce the federal law.
So who's doing it under his
administration? He doesn't enforce immigration, so he's not going to. He said he wouldn't enforce the marijuana.
I knew you'd get that in. Kerry always gets that in.
Well, that was Governor Brewer. He says, well, if you're going to enforce that, why don't you enforce immigration? I'm just quoting.
That's funny. So, but it's someone, you heard it was some other federal attorney, obviously under Obama, that is now
that
stepping up.
That made the threat a couple weeks ago. That's what started it.
Amazing. That gets confusing. People that put a lot of money in are probably not happy.
There is millions of dollars that has already been invested in this already. It's if it gets shut down, boy, you're in limbo.
So as an attorney, I'm just wondering, can the people that relied on the current law then sue someone, the state, for that?
Well, it hasn't been turned down. It's just postponed.
It's been put on hold, so
right.
I don't know if there'd be a cause of action at this point.
But I guess in theory, if it is... then turn down, maybe they could.
Good thing is...
It would depend on how they overturn the law, because the law is the law now.
Yeah.
Very strange. Wow. Yeah.
Well, the good thing is the only investment is zoning and app. versus a total infrastructure, I mean, the structure, putting up a store, which you're talking millions and millions.
Well, this is, we're at the end of the show already. Can you believe it? Meg, why don't you give out some contact information?
Sure. My law firm name, again, is Lerona Steiner Dukar. Our website is azlawyers.com. My phone number, in case anyone wants to reach me, is 602-277-9843.
Thank you so much. You are magnificent. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Chris, contact.
Chris Gray at American Financial Lending, 602-277-3800. And if I could, really quick, June 2nd is, I believe, a Thursday evening at Mikhail's on Central, 4001 North Central. I'm going to have a lot of investors and realtors and people all in the industry there answering questions. So if you'd like to come see me at Mikhail's for some snacks and maybe some drink, Thursday the 2nd, June 2nd, come see me there.
Excellent. Terry.
Terry Cass, Cast and Long Commercial Group, 602-445-4124.
Well, very good. This has been a great panel, very enlightening. I think we've cleared up some answers or questions that people had. Anyway, thank you again, Terry, Chris, and Meg.
Thank you.
Tomorrow, great show, sports show, Eddie Johnson from the Phoenix Suns and Ann Myers Drysdale, president of the Phoenix Mercury on Breakthrough Sports. And we'll see you tomorrow.